Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My husband recently asked me for something that could help him sleep and also relax that wasn't THC or a heavy dose of NyQuil. So I gave him Next Evo CBD. They are perfect to take after a long day and a perfect transition from relaxation into sleep. They're all natural, but also really potent. And my husband just asked me to order him another jar. So head to the link in the episode notes to check these out and use my special discounts for free shipping and other bundles. Next Evo CBD, totally life-changing. Welcome to The Outlier. I'm your host, Lauren Conlin. I hope everyone had a great weekend. I'm going to be coming to you twice this week with some content. It's going to be today and it's going to be on Thursday because I'm actually going to Mexico for a friend's wedding later this week. So I'm trying to get some stuff out so I don't have to bring any audio equipment to Mexico. So forgive me for just the sporadic episode release this week. I'm also a little nervous to go to Mexico. I wish I could just calm my nerves in some way. Like I know intellectually it's very touristy and I'll be fine, but I just always worry because that's unfortunately who I am. But anyway, today is Monday, March 4th, and that means that the defense, the Karen Reed defense team, has about 2 days to file any supplemental motions into the request to dismiss the case and disqualify the prosecution's theory. So I misspeak in the interview with Kirk. I say that they have to file today. That is absolutely not true. They have to file on the 6th. So I want to take a minute before I get to our awesome guest today to say some things about John O'Keefe just as a person. And I always say this, but when a case becomes sensationalized, we sometimes forget about the victim and our goal in seeking justice for that victim. And I don't want that to happen to John. So I was actually searching for some information on him and his family. And I just found myself very upset, in tears, reading about the death of his sister and his brother-in-law 3 months apart in 2014. And I'm going to link out an article I read, but man, the O'Keefe family has just suffered so immensely. His niece and nephew, John's niece and nephew, were only 6 and 3 when they lost both of their parents. And my own kids are 5 and 7, and it made me just so ill to think about them not having me or my husband, and then losing someone precious to them, their new guardian, their uncle, Uncle JJ, as they called him. Like, how is that fair? And I am a Christian, but this is tough. And I know that as a Christian, you're supposed to trust God's plan, But I don't like this plan for those kids. And when I first covered this case, I put a GoFundMe in the episode notes for them. And I'm doing that again now for this episode. The GoFundMe is a link that I believe John's friend and his older brother started for their niece and nephew. But I have that in the episode notes, and I'm also going to read a few words about John from a Boston Globe article that I've also linked out, and I'm paraphrasing here. I'm trying to keep some of the death details out. Quote, a family friend on Thursday remembered Boston police officer John J. O'Keefe, who was found lying unconscious in the snow in Canton last weekend, prompting his girlfriend's arrest, as a hero who adopted his niece and nephew following the deaths of his sister and brother-in-law from a separate medical condition months apart. Quote, if there's a definition for a hero, he's one of those definitions without a doubt, said Canton resident Jack Hughes, who lived around the corner from O'Keefe's sister and became friends with the officer when he stepped up to take care of the kids and adopt them. O'Keefe, Hughes said, made that choice without any reluctance. Quote, there was no hesitation, Hughes said. He changed his life for these two kids. He went to another house here in Canton to give them an altogether new start. He was a great father to them, and now these poor kids have lost their third parent. The Patriot Ledger reported in 2014 that O'Keefe's sister Kristen died of a brain tumor in November of 2013, and then her husband Stephen died of a heart attack just 2 months later. Johnny was a good guy, Hughes said. He'd walk across the room just to shake your hand and say hello. Just one of those people who would go out of his way to help you if you needed help. O'Keefe's family had offered similar recollections in a statement released Wednesday by the Boston Police Department. Quote, John was not only a dedicated police officer, he was an exemplary guardian, son, brother, uncle and friend, and we were so fortunate to have him as part of our lives, said the O'Keefe family. When John's sister passed away, and then her husband did as well, a short time later, John welcomed the opportunity to raise his beloved niece and nephew and build a home and a life around their needs. The O'Keefe family continued, people talk about someone who would give you the shirt off their back, but that's truly who John was, and it's heartbreaking for us to suddenly be talking about him in the past tense. End quote. I think that says a lot about who he was as a person. He was a police officer, so he wanted to help people, and just the fact that he changed his entire life to become a father figure for his niece and nephew is just so incredible. So I just want to make sure that we are paying attention to John and we are honoring him in all of this coverage. Although some people could also say that Karen Reed is a victim in this if they are very, very convinced that she is innocent and not guilty of killing John. They could definitely argue that she is also a victim. But I do plan on continuing the coverage on this case. And as you can see, the Outlier podcast, it focuses on crime and pop culture. And generally, this podcast isn't a series, it's episode based. So you don't necessarily have to listen to the previous episode to understand the current. But I will note that I am making the John O'Keefe, Karen Reed case a small part of this podcast right now. And if there is a trial, I'll be making arrangements to attend for a few days so I can cover it from there as well. And the point of me saying that was just that if anybody has anything that they would like people to hear about John, about what kind of person he was, if you have a story that you want to share, please email me and I will put it in this podcast because, again, I think it's really important to honor him. And my email is lauren@magicshack.com. It's also in the episode notes as well. And a couple of other things I want to address before introducing Kirk Nurmi, my guest. Some people on Twitter said I had it wrong about Tom Beatty and his daughter and Colin Albert, that whole communication, and Jen McCabe and a friend confronting Tom's daughter. So I spoke to a source out of Canton that confirms that I did have it right about Tom's daughter being contacted by Colin that night at 12:30 a.m., but it was another woman, not Jennifer McCabe, who allegedly told his daughter to shove a dick in her mouth. Excuse my language. And the Facebook post that I referenced about this, someone else made a snide comment, but saying, oh, I'm waiting for this totally legit Facebook post to appear from Jen McCabe. I wasn't saying that Jen McCabe wrote a Facebook post. I was referring to a Facebook post that Tom Beatty essentially made denouncing his former friends for their behavior. And this was hinted. It wasn't directly stated in this post, but it seems to me that he just made it clear he wanted nothing to do with any of those people or what was going on here. So I just wanted to clarify that. And another side note, after I featured Janine Driver, the body language expert, someone sent me a clip of Karen Reed unedited on the steps of the courthouse with her attorneys, and there was a reporter who asked if she did it. And she doesn't deny it. She says, you all know who did it. So I did send that to Janine, to be fair, since she went off of the Karen Reed Nightline interview when she specifically stated that Karen says very, very clearly, I did not kill John O'Keefe. And Janine praised that. So Janine stated to me via text that no, that whole exchange on the courthouse, that was not good, and that was not a good answer at all. But she did reiterate that she was generally going off of Reed's body language as a whole, not just those one-off instances, but no, that was not a good exchange or a good look for Karen Reed on the steps of that courthouse when you see the unedited clip. Okay, so my guest for today, Kirk Nurmi. He is best known for defending Jodi Arias in 2013 in Arizona. Jodi Arias was convicted of killing her boyfriend, Travis Alexander. And Kirk does not practice law anymore, but he is always on Court TV offering commentary on the latest case. And let me preface, and I say this briefly at the beginning of the interview, but I had Kirk on my other podcast about Grant Solomon, which is called Corruption, What Happened to Grant Solomon, if you'd like to go listen to that. And he did not tell me what I wanted to hear at all. And I always get accused of having experts or guests on. People say, oh, they're just telling you what you want to hear and you have them on for a reason. And that's just not true. Kirk said something on my podcast with Grant Solomon that I absolutely did not want to hear. And, you know, it really gutted me. So I would just like to say that all of the random bullying I'm getting on Twitter, which I'm fairly certain is coming from grown men with burner accounts, I'm not going to engage with you or argue with you or even block you for that matter. But I will remind you that no one is forcing you to come to my page or listen to my podcasts. And I cover a lot of stories, entertainment, and pop culture as well, as I mentioned. And I will make mistakes and I will admit to them. But I'm sleeping just fine at night, even with these freaks calling me a grifter and saying that I quote unquote am BJing where I need to go because I don't have the talent. Thank you so much for your mature opinion. I am sure you are the CEO of your mom's basement, and I'm actually kind of jealous because she probably does all your laundry. But okay, I digress. I'm not trying to make this about me, so I'm sorry. without further ado, here is my interview with Kirk Nurmi.
Lauren, it's always a pleasure.
Well, I loved our conversation so much last time about the Grant Solomon case. Even though I had a lot to think about and I didn't necessarily agree with everything. So people that accuse me, by the way, of only having guests on that I agree with, this should be an example of the complete opposite.
Right. You didn't throw me off to the scrap heap. So yeah, I am.
No, but I love it. I really do love differing opinions. I just think it's nice for people to be able to speak like adults, if you do have differing opinions, and be respectful about it. And I also acknowledge the fact that you were a lawyer. You are a lawyer. You are a very well-respected lawyer, and I am not. I don't know everything that you know. I didn't study what you studied, so I do respect that. But let's get into Karen Reed. So I just want to know, just right off the bat, as a criminal defense attorney, what's your take right now?
Boy, that's a big question. And
I know.
a former criminal defense attorney, I'm proud of that. I'm much happier now that I'm not practicing. But let me say a few things, especially having been with someone who was involved in a high profile case, right? And a lot of what can happen, or what we see in the news, what we see in the media, isn't necessarily accurate to exactly what the evidence is going to be. Even if it's those things that people are talking about, reading and pleadings, what have you, there's probably 10 to 20% of it that's known to the public and a lot that isn't. So everything I say is kind of clouded by that reality. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. The other thing I think is important to point out, we're here on, I think it's the 4th of March, 2024, and there is another cloud over everything I'm going to say and the case in general, because we have a document dump of about 3,000 plus pages of federal investigation that is taking on the Canton Police Department. And so that the information in there could drastically alter everything that we're about to say as well. Mm-hmm. And the public doesn't know about that, right? And so there's a lot of vehemency on both sides of the aisle saying whether she's innocent or guilty. And one of the things that the perspective I like to try to bring, and maybe you got some of this when our conversation about Grant Solomon, is the most objective one possible, the most dispassionate, if you will, because I think that's ultimately, you know, how we achieve justice, is looking at the realities before us and not trying to please our passions one way or the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think today the defense is supposed to file a motion to dismiss, or they're supposed to get it into the judge. And I think a lot of us who paid attention to that hearing, we heard the prosecution say something along the lines of, and this is how I interpreted it, but something along the lines of, well, whatever the Fed said in this, you know, in these documents, 90% of it reflects our theory or is not new. That's what I took from that. And I was like, well, wait a minute. Is she saying what I think she's saying? And that, you know, there is no investigation like with the feds. And then I'm like, no, can't be. That literally can't be. Especially since something else came out about the Sandra Birchmore case. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the Norfolk DA's office is no longer investigating that anymore. So, you know, I think that's kind of telling as well.
Yeah, I mean, the standard pat response of prosecutors when anything are looked into, when defense makes discovery, is, hey, there's nothing to see here. We'll hear the words, this is a fishing expedition. And, you know, to which my response is, I want some fish. And I know there's some fish there. And the idea, the supposition put forward by the state that there's nothing to see here, that the feds just investigated for the heck of it.
Yeah.
And they really support our theory, because they weren't investigating the case so much as they were investigating the police department, the prosecutors, et cetera. Right. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there's nothing to see here isn't one that resonates with me.
Right. Right. And that same with me. And I think same with a lot of people. However, if you err on the side that she's 100% guilty, these people were like, told ya, see, I told you. And I think that's what's so interesting about this. And I've said this before, but sometimes I think people on both sides don't read the responses, I guess, from the other side, which can sort of cloud judgment as well. And I was guilty of that at first. I was like, well, you know, this document said this. And then I was like, well, wait a second, this says this. Now it's giving me something to think about, right?
Well, one, and you're right. I mean, it's a bigger problem in society. We have a inclination these days to try to talk past each other, right? One of the things we have to understand, and I've certainly seen this on both sides of this case, really, more certainly those that support the Commonwealth's belief or the theory that Karen Reed did this, is they will read what I would call advocacy, fact-based advocacy, or, you know, experts opining, what have you, and saying that is verbatim, that is it. The Commonwealth, you know, cops are beyond reproach, and this is what's going to happen, and that's why she did it, right?
Yeah.
And there's others that will take other data without any scrutiny upon it and say, okay, this shows that she's absolutely not guilty. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you're right, because even when we say pleadings, I've seen so many people say that the pleadings are just this verbatim, unquestionable deal, particularly those proffered by the Commonwealth. And that's just not true. I mean, quite frankly, I consider that kind of un-American, because we have a system in which you are innocent until proven guilty. And that means we automatically, the default position should be to impose scrutiny anytime the government is trying to take away someone's liberty. That's the social contract that we have engaged in as Americans.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think something else that's been incredibly confusing to me is the experts on both sides with, you know, the cell phone data. I'm baffled by this, why, how each side could have such conflicting statements or experts saying this search happened at 2 a.m. I mean, you know, I think one of the last filings had only touched upon, well, the, you know, our Celebrate expert said this happened between 6 and 7, but they didn't actually address the 2 a.m. Search, right? They just said these definitively happened. Well, sure, maybe they did, but I guess it was purposeful for them not to mention the 2 a.m. Search because they're not sure, or maybe it did happen. I don't know how you interpret that, but that's been very confusing.
Boy, I mean, there's a lot to say, but one of the other things that I think about when I think about this data, like the Celebrite data, the in terms of the searching, when I talk about the Apple Watch / phone data shows, yeah, Mr. O'Keefe inside the house, you know, Celebrite data is pretty straightforward. I mean, in terms of the time, what have you, it's work off Greenwich Mean Time. You have to adjust for time zones, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you're going to get a pretty precise situation on that. It's interesting with the cell phone data, too, because like I say, I want to hear the reasoning behind the expert's opinion. I want to hear them on the stand. I mean, that's why we have trials, right? We,
yeah,
trials in the courtroom, not by social media, not by podcasts, not, yeah, by any media, right? We have, yeah, them in the courtroom. And part of what the assertions made by both sides in terms of location data being one of the big ones, I think, and, you know, yeah, and again, the Celebrite data, the state is saying, hey, or Commonwealth, nothing to see here, you know, to, you know, what have you, right? Which to me is intellectually dishonest, because Jennifer McCabe, I believe that's the woman that made that search, right?
Yeah.
If she was the suspect, if she was the one fitting the narrative, those people that would automatically believe the Commonwealth would take this cell phone data, would take these Celebrite searches as sacrosanct. If Karen Reed made, yeah, that search, it would be indisputable evidence.
Yeah.
But because it doesn't fit their narrative, then it becomes, you know, problematic. It's not so specific. I mean, I'm thinking about this case, yeah, and how many times did the Commonwealth come forward and say somebody's guilty based on this same data that they're arguing now lacks merit? And I've seen it all the time in prosecutions, and it's just like, well, we're the authority, we're the government, whatever we say goes in a particular case, and there's no intellectual honesty in those positions.
Right. Now, going back to what you said, I did interview Jennifer Coffendaffer earlier as well, who really believes that Karen is guilty. And she said something to me, you know, that I did question at the time. And it's funny that you're bringing this up, because it just reminded me that I think I jotted down, I need to question this. But she said something like, well, you know, when you go into trial, you go into your trial knowing that you pretty much have all of this evidence already. So you know what to expect. You pretty much already know the outcome. And I have to find out exactly what you said. But I just remember thinking, well, that can't be true, because the defense isn't required to turn over all of, you know, their, I don't know what you want to call it, a smoking gun or whatever, their, you know, their big pieces of evidence, right? So, for example, somebody came forward and said they were asked to remove a taillight. And, but there was no chain of custody taken. I don't know if you had heard anything about this. But somebody spoke about this on a YouTube show on Friday night, I believe. And this was mentioned to the defense previously. But there was nothing in the reports about it because nothing was written down officially. So that was one thing that I was like, wow, they really could be holding on to that. The other thing was the civilian witness that was mentioned on the last motion saying, well, according to John's cell phone data and a civilian witness, he was placed inside 34 Fairview. So I was like, whoa, you know, did somebody flip here? And obviously, you know, a civilian, it's not Brian Higgins, right? It's not Brian Albert. It's not they're police officers and ATF agents. So it must have been somebody attending the party. Probably a female, if I had to guess. But these are just things that I'm thinking about. So it's like, no, I think a lot is going to come out at trial that we don't know about.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to believe that, you know, trial, depending on the discovery provisions of each state and whether they, like in Arizona, for example, you always got to interview a witness, what have you. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's some truth to what Jennifer was saying about you kind of know what the witnesses are going to say, but it's not complete. Okay. Right. It's different because when people get in a courtroom and swear on the oath and sit in the witness stand with the judge and what have you, mm-hmm. it's different. Things take on a different tone and they might be asked different questions that they were not asked at the interview. New information could have arisen since they were interviewed. So there's always a element of surprise. Based on my experience, I've done a ton of trials. There's always an element of surprise in every trial in terms of what a witness is going to say, how they might try to hedge, what have you. I think, you know, state's experts, you know, they might change based on a particular theory, a change in theory. You know, trying to explain the cell phone data, it might be a little different. So, yeah, there's always that kind of element. And then cross-examination, of course, that kind of can illuminate some of the inconsistencies that aren't apparent at this point in time.
What do you think about the medical examiner's statements concluding at one point that she didn't think that these injuries were from a fight? I believe that was one of the first documents that ever came out on the Commonwealth side. They had the medical examiner say this. What has been your experience with medical examiners and are they usually accurate and are they equipped to make this kind of statement?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, I think in general, they're equipped to make this kind of statement, but whether or not it is accurate, I don't know. Like I say, I'm not going to take the government's version of events verbatim, right? And ultimately, what we have here is, you know, and people don't want to acknowledge this. You know, I've heard a lot of advocacy about this saying, hey, this is the state's medical examiner. They're beyond reproach. That no, they are a police officer. They are an agent of the government designed to make conclusions that are consistent with the state's theory of the case. What's always amusing is not the right word, but ironic to me is that a lot of people will hoist that agenda onto defense witnesses, yet act like the witnesses for the state are somehow pristine angels floating around just trying to create justice. And that's not true. The narratives can change based on what the government and what prosecutors want, because they are part of the team. They have working relationships. They have, so it is not beyond something that should be questioned. And again, that's what we talk about trial. We talk about, you know, the other expert analysis, because the defense is obviously going to have an expert that says that these injuries are related to a physical altercation that happened in the house. At least that's the theory goes, right?
Yeah.
So, and then once those theories, those dueling theories are put before that's why they're the finder of fact.
Yeah.
That, you know, they go through cross-examination and the jury decides which one is more plausible, and or more specifically, if, you know, there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt as relates to the conclusions that the state's medical examiner is making.
Right. Now, I guess this is where it gets a little hairy for me. If the defense is alleging a police government cover up, and let's say the police and the government, they have access to the body, they have access to the taillight, whatever. And DNA is found on this taillight of John's DNA, let's say. How do you refute that as a defense attorney when you're trying to say this is a cover up? But I just feel like it, the word cover up, and I deal with this with, you know, Grant Solomon as well. It feels like you could so easily be gaslit and you could so easily sound crazy, like a conspiracy theorist. How do you deal with this in court, and how do you navigate this, you know, your theory when it sounds so beyond, you know?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I mean, I think it begins, and it's kind of maybe a boring answer, but it begins with jury selection. It begins with having jurors that are going to be open-minded and listen to it, because there's a lot of people that just want to believe cops, want to believe the state's theory, want to that sort of thing, right? They don't, you know, oftentimes you'll ask on voir dire when you're interviewing potential witnesses, you know, do you believe cops always tell the truth? And most people say yes, right? And so that becomes, you know, problematic to the defense. So you've got to make sure that you have people that are open to listening to what you're saying. But also, I think important is the idea, and the jury's obviously going to be instructed on this, is the defense doesn't have to prove anything. They just have to, you know, show that the state doesn't, or the Commonwealth, I keep saying the state, the Commonwealth does not have proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Ms. Reed did it. And here's our theory, but they don't have to prove it. They have to put it out there. They have to make it viable. They have to draw questions on that sort of thing. And really, from what we're seeing in the press, the theory is viable, because my assessment of the case, is it possible that it happened the way the Commonwealth said? Yes, absolutely, 100%. But is it also possible that it happened the way the defense stated? Yes, I believe that is also possible. And, you know, so, you know, this idea that they are doing a good job in the sense that they are putting reasonable doubt out into the jury panel.
Yeah. And I totally agree with that, because that's something I've been saying. And that's something I said to Jennifer. I just said, well, I don't see at this point who would convict her. You're telling me 12 jurors are going to convict her when I do feel like there are so many holes. And while Yannetti and Jackson have done a pretty great job of conveying to the public at this point that there is a lot of reasonable doubt here. And like I said, I still have so many questions. I really, really, I have a lot of questions. But I still, you know, the biggest thing for me, and what I really want to see come to light also, is these, I think it's 31 pages of messages between John O'Keefe and Kevin Albert. And I don't think this is, and again, I came into this case a little bit late, so I don't know how much this has been spoken about, but, you know, Kevin Albert is Colin Albert's uncle. Kevin Albert worked for the Canton Police Department, and it's been said that John was trying to let them know that Colin was allegedly selling drugs, something like that, and that he was just trying to, like, be cool and say, hey, Kevin, I think this is going on, blah, blah, blah. And I want to tell you about it. And there's, you know, there's a call between them. There's pages of text messages. I believe there's an email, and I believe this was in discovery. So I'm wondering what was said between them, and could that be additional motive for the Colin Albert theory?
Right, and that goes back to what I was saying before about not knowing a large percentage of the evidence, because you don't know the context of those text messages. We don't know the specific verbiage, right? Mm-hmm. And also, in conjunction with that, with the assertions that you're talking about, the theory of drug selling and things like that, is that what got the feds to start the investigation? What got the feds started involved in this case and in this police department? So there's lots of questions that give rise to that, right? And we also, we talk about text messages. You know, there's originally a manslaughter charge. Then she doesn't plead guilty to that. So suppose the text messages between Karen Reed and Mr. O'Keefe are reason enough to increase the penalty, which to me only feeds the alternative theories. And one thing I think is important to say is when everybody shoots down these alternative theories, but if there was really proof beyond a reasonable doubt, there wouldn't be room for alternative theories. Right. But we see we were talking this morning on Court TV about the tragic death of Madeline Soto at the hands of her mother's boyfriend. Right. There is not going to be room for alternative theories in that case because of the evidence, and the investigation was so thorough. When you have something like this, there is such a big lane for alternative theories.
Yeah. And it's also the human behavior of so many people that were involved with this, or in my opinion, I really do feel like, and I had people just get so up in arms about this, but I really can't get over the fact that the Alberts didn't come outside when there was so much noise outside and somebody's dead on their front lawn. I a fellow officer, I can't get over that. I really can't. I think that was one of the strangest things besides Jennifer McCabe's 911 call that was so eerily calm that it sent shivers down my spine. I mean, she knew this man so well. I just can't imagine being that calm, seeing my friend in such a state.
Was she a police officer?
No, Jennifer McCabe. Okay. Not that I know of. Not that I know of, but I mean that, it's just, that was her sister's house.
Right.
It's crazy. Like those things that the people on the other side who firmly say Karen's guilty, what they argue back about Karen's human behavior. I'm just like, I could say the same thing about so many things,
Right.
But yeah, like you said, I think it's just going to obviously come down to the trial, but as somebody who defended a very high profile murderer, I don't know how to, whatever you want to say. I mean, this is probably a weird question, but like if you were representing Karen Reed, I kind of think you might have an easier time with this trial than Jody.
Well, there's certainly.
No shade, against Jackson or Yenny, but I just,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's an apples and oranges type of situation, I think, to make that comparison. And, I tend to be one, and this is no commentary or derision on the defense attorney she has. I tend to be one that thinks that we should be trying cases in the courtroom, not necessarily in the media, because that's where they're won and lost. They're not won and lost, like I said, in podcasts or what have you, right? So, but at the same time, I think they are doing an excellent job. And like I said before, there is room for alternative theories here, and they are right to, and they have experts. You know, a lot of people say, oh, these, the casting of a defense attorney is that they're the sleazeball trying to get somebody off, when really they're trying to protect the constitutional rights of the accused. Yeah. And the things that they are putting into the media are not without support. They're not without expert support. They're not without factual foundation, what have you, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, this case is, like I say, it's riddled with reasonable doubt, because earlier you talked about, I have so many questions. Well, those questions are called reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, if Karen Reed doesn't get convicted, they're going to say, oh, it was these sleazy defense attorneys. They made all this stuff up. You're going to hear the, you know, people saying stuff like that, right? When in reality, that's our system. And right now, to me, it seems like the case that the Commonwealth is making is highly flawed. Mm-hmm. And it does, again, its flawed nature in and of itself leads to what people might call conspiracy theories, because a lot of it, and we had the the credibility, if you will, and I forget the exact issue, but there was a police commissioner saying that a certain officer wasn't on the scene, and there he was, you know, on the scene mentioned in the report. So credibility is lost. It gives rise to the idea that there could be a conspiracy. And listen, the more people involved, the less likely a conspiracy can maintain intact. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a conspiracy.
Yeah. And that's a big thing that that people do say, that who think she's guilty is like, you're telling me there would have to be 50 people involved in this conspiracy. I don't know if you have to necessarily share everything with people directly or indirectly involved with the quote unquote conspiracy. I say that from my work on the Grant Solomon case with some people in Gallatin. I don't necessarily think everybody's in on that. At the DA's office or at the Gallatin PD, I really don't. I think there are ways around it personally, but just the last thing that I want to ask you, do you think at this point, jury selection, this has been kind of weighing on me. I'm so concerned for the jury selection. I don't see how they are going to find anybody who has not heard about this case or who has not been swayed by the media.
Well, you'd be surprised. And I say that because there are a lot of people, I guess, because, you know, you and I function in this world, right? You're doing true crime podcasts. I'm on Court TV, what have you. It's hard to believe that there are people that know nothing about these things.
Yeah.
One of the realities is, and having been there, you know, selecting a jury in high profile case, even with the second time around, there are people that don't know about these things, don't
even
pay
locally?
Attention, that are
locally?
Even like, locally, right?
Yeah.
There are still people that don't know or don't, because keep in mind though, it's not just if you have no knowledge of the case, but if you've formed opinions about the case that are that can't be changed, right?
Right.
So
right.
As a matter of fact, you, just using you as an example, if you were in the jury box, you might know a lot about this case. You have some information about it, what have you. Have you formed an opinion, or would you be open to listening to the evidence presented? And your most likely response would be, you'd be open to listening to the evidence presented. I mean, honestly, that would be your response, not as a covert journalist.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
jury.
Honestly,
right.
That right. would be my response.
And so there's a lot of people that are would be in that category, even if they know a little about the case, even if they've seen a blurb or two about that in the news. Mm-hmm. The quest isn't purity, that you don't know anything about it, but that you haven't already formed an opinion. So if you had, Jennifer Coffendoffer and Janine Driver on a jury panel,
yeah,
both of them would be struck because they've already formulated opinions, it seems, that
yes.
that are kind of set in stone, if you will, that aren't, mm-hmm. you would lean more towards this side, you would lean more towards that side, what have you. Whereas if you were on that same panel, I would pass you for cause because you're open to listening to both sides, where the other two ladies would be gone based on their adherence to one side or the other.
Yeah. And I am open to listening to both sides 100%. And I do try to ask other people, other sources for information that do believe in her guilt so I can weigh everything. But I haven't been quiet about me leaning towards her innocence. And I think that, you know, that definitely upsets people based on, you know, that say, oh, well, you're, you know, you should be indifferent if you're covering this. Well, I'm not investigating this. You know, I'm not, I'll be honest.
Right.
I'm reporting on this. Let's say I'm observing on everything. And I have stronger opinions based, you know, of her innocence than I do her guilt, but I still have questions. I still have questions. So I also don't know if I would be fair. You know, I don't know if I would necessarily want someone like me, and you didn't know this. I'm not expecting you to have listened to like the last five podcasts I've done on this, but like, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I trust myself because I would absolutely listen, but I also don't know if, you know, I've read Turtle Boy stuff. His stuff was very convincing. Some of his findings. I mean, I fact checked it. He hasn't necessarily been wrong on a lot of stuff. I don't agree with his intimidation of witnesses and that whole thing, but you know, he found Lucky Loughran. He found these witnesses that the cops didn't. And that's hard to ignore, you know?
Yeah. And I was just using what you told me as an example of that, of course, that kind of fair and impartial jury. And I'm laughing to myself because I wondered if we were going to make it through this whole podcast without mentioning the now infamous Turtle Boy.
Yeah.
And he is... poked his head out of his shell and he is here. But
I try not to, but it's like he's part of it.
Yeah, he is in a lot of ways. And when you know, you think about his treatment to some extent, I don't agree with the intimidation of witnesses. I don't think, you know, it's wise to share information, but he generally speaking has been right.
Yes.
more often than not. Right. So, and he brings the receipt. So in that regard, right there, that, you know, and he's someone and the things he espouses is someone that there wouldn't be room for if this investigation was as solid as some people want you to believe, right. They believe it. They want to make the assertions it's paid protesters that, that he is being, that Mr. Kearney's being paid, et cetera, without any evidence that I know of to demonstrative of that. I heard Jennifer Koffendorf on your show say, well, there was an ad for protesters. Well, anybody could put that ad up, right? I could put that ad up just to insert myself in and just to get people talking, right? It's just, you know, it's not evidence. It's not facts. It's just conjecture that somebody will use to try to bolster their opinion as well. But, you know, to get back to your question, I do think jury selection might take a while. It might take longer than normal, but I do think ultimately they will find people that don't have enough knowledge of the case where they have made a judgment. And the trial, to me, this is one of the trials I've been looking forward to most because I know that there's so much. There's so much doubt. There's a lot of trials where I call them long form guilty pleas, where we saw him in Adam Montgomery, right? The murder of his daughter. It was obvious where that case was going. The evidence was there. You know, it would have been the same if he signed a guilty plea. That's why we used to call them long form guilty pleas. And, you know what the outcome's going to be. But with a case like Karen Reed, you really don't, and you really don't know all the evidence, and you're going to see, you know, medical examiners dueling it out. You're going to see cell phone experts dueling it out, and you're going to all these officers. A lot of officers are going to face a lot of scrutiny, and of course, you know, I started off this podcast talking about that DOJ investigation, and that is going to impose some interesting evidence and supposition into this trial. And the idea to me, as I sit here now, knowing what we know, the idea that Miss Reed is going to be convicted of this crime seems nonsensical to me. It makes no sense.
Because of all of the reasonable doubt. And do you, what do you think about, do you think a mistrial would be possible rather than not guilty?
It's possible. I mean, look, jurors and jury selection is such an important part of it because of the mindset of the jurors. But one thing that no one can really ever account for that I wish there was a way to study more is the group dynamics of a jury, excuse me, because you generally pick jurors as individuals for their mindset, what have you. And then when they get together, whether it's 6, 8, 12, whatever it is, personalities can change. And I've had cases. I remember one case, and you know, the foreperson was the one who stayed behind, and I could tell he swayed everyone else to his position because the other jurors left, and he was the one who wanted to boast. And there's been other jurors where jurors have come out and said, "Can we throw these people off the jury? They don't agree with us. This is dynamics of it all and the pressure and the groupthink, right? And that kind of bullying mentality and all those things that come about. So, you know, when we see hung juries for those, some of those reasons, because of the dynamics of it all. And then maybe somebody feels bullied and then they are entrenched in their position no matter what, right? So that's what makes it really difficult when you talk about predicting what a jury is going to do, not only the individuals, right, but how they interact together in a closed room and having an experience they probably never had before in their lives.
I mean, if the jury room, the deliberation room is anything like fucking Twitter, it's going to take forever. This is never, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, these people are going to be like killing each other in the back. Okay. And I lied. Sorry. One more thing.
Okay.
Let's say it's a mistrial. Let's say not guilty. We still have John O'Keefe. We still have a man that died and we still have a family that's grieving. And if that was me, I would want justice. And now at this point, do you think there is enough evidence there to start charging the other parties just to, you know, turn the tables here and say, okay, well, what do we do now? You know, if she's not guilty, maybe, you know, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Like, how does his family get justice for him?
You know, and I'm glad you asked that question, because I think when we talk about a case like this that is so high profile and does bring so much competition, so much angst, against each other, right? It almost becomes like a sporting event, right? It almost becomes Team Commonwealth versus Team Reed. And I don't think it should be that way, because in that kind of battle, you lose sight of Mr. O'Keefe and the tragedy of the loss of his life. And, you know, he was adopting, I think they were his cousins, right?
His niece and nephew.
And so, you know, all those things get lost in this kind of battle, if you will. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
But to get to your question, you know, really, once the Commonwealth points the finger and whether it's confirmation bias, what have you, they have really pointed that finger. So you think about it, if Karen Reed is acquitted, mm-hmm, which I think she will be, the question then becomes, okay, well, did somebody else do it? But if they were to say, okay, the new evidence of someone else's guilt would have to be overwhelming, because you think about it, let's say somebody else gets tabbed with this murder, say, you know, John Smith, right? Mm-hmm. John Smith is tabbed with this killing. What's going to happen if John Smith is prosecuted? Well, if I was John Smith's attorney, I would be calling I would be moving to disqualify the prosecutor's office, because they prosecuted Karen Reed. I'd say, well, you functioned under the supposition that Karen Reed did this, didn't you? I'd want those prosecutors as witnesses in my case.
Yeah, right, right.
And say, okay, you believe this, you believe that. Why did you believe this? Why did you believe that? And now you're coming after my guy because you weren't successful. Right. And so,
argument.
Yeah. I don't see how a subsequent prosecution without overwhelming evidence.
And now it's been years and it's
could be made. Yes.
Yeah. And it's obvious they did not get, they did not collect the evidence that they should have, because they didn't treat it like it was a crime scene at the Albert household. And now it's not their house. And, you know, the dog is not their dog and all these things. Okay. That's pretty sucky, I would say, for the fan. Like, that's, I would be pretty upset, I think, if I were John's family, when it comes down to it, I guess, if she, you know what I mean? I mean, I think that they believe that she is guilty. I do think that. And I think that, and I don't actually know. I have heard that they think she's guilty, or they definitely don't support her. They're not on her side during the hearings, you know, whatever. But yeah, I do think about them a lot. They've suffered a lot in their lives with, you know, John's sister passing away and her husband, and, you know, John taking over as guardians for his nieces and nephew. Yeah. And now him, you know, it's just not okay. So I do feel very sad for them, but.
Yeah. And as we all should, and they are another group of individuals that's getting lost in all this, right? But, but you know, and they may very well believe the Commonwealth's version of events. They have people that are authority figures telling them this is the case. And typically, you know, in my experience, one thing that happens is if a prosecutor loses a case or if a cop is caught lying on the stand, first of all, nothing happens to him. But second of all, it's always those shiesty defense attorneys, right? It's never our case failed. And the best of prosecutors that I've beaten in trial on what they thought were lock, stock cases would concede that I did a great job. And, you know, but the worst of them would certainly just like, you know, it's a sleazy defense attorney. It's not my failure. It's his sleazy behavior. And and that's probably the line that will come out if the Commonwealth loses this case.
I think you are right. I do. Well, Kirk, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. As always, I will put all of your handles that people want to follow Kirk. He's at Nurmi Unchained everywhere. So it'll be very easy. Yeah, I'll put it out in the episode notes. But because, yeah, you have a lot of great insight, not just on this case, but on many other cases, as you mentioned, on Court TV and, you know, other podcasts that you were a guest on. So I do thank you so much. And we'll be in touch.
Lauren, it's always a pleasure.
Okay, that was former criminal defense attorney Kirk Nurmi. And he's also on Court TV. He's been talking about this case as well. And I don't think he's going to stop anytime soon. So keep an eye out for him if you're following this case on Court TV. And I'm just going to say it. I felt like he was fairly unbiased. And now one could argue that he was not unbiased because he is approaching this from the lens of a criminal defense attorney, which, fine, you're correct. He definitely is. But I thought he said it perfectly. He said, is this possible that she did it? Sure, it's possible. Of course it's possible. But is it also possible that she didn't do it? Yes, that's possible as well. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. As I said, I will have another episode this week for Thursday, and then next week I'll go back to my regular schedule with releasing episodes on Fridays and a potential bonus episode at another point in the week. If you like this podcast, don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you listen. I would be so grateful. Until next time.
Experience that afternoon slump, but sometimes we don't want to have caffeine too late in the day. So this is when I drink Noon Brew Tea. It's so good. It's specifically designed for the afternoon to bust you out of that slump. It has 19 superfoods that help with energy, digestion, focus, and even deep sleep. It does all of this without the coffee jitters. So use the code OUTLIER for 10% off your first order. Head to noonbrew.co and remember, use the code OUTLIER.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.